Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, TNT Hoops episode 13. I'm here once again with my co-host, Quitty Slanger. Quitty, what's good?
What's good, bro? Chilling, you know, living life, man. Been a long week, you know. The NBA coming to an end here, going into the playoffs. Been kind of boring this last drag. You know, you got Wade and Dirk, though, so it's been cool. How about you, bro?
I'm doing well, man. Just as you said, I'm excited that the playoffs are finally upon us, man. It's been a long 82-game season, but
yes, sir.
The fact that we are finally here, and it's good to finally get another
chance to see
our Sixers again, man, in the playoff setting.
Yes, sir. The real season is here, like you said, man. So let's get into what we're going to talk about today. We got, you know, we're just going to talk about, you know, we're going to give our props to D-Wade and, you know, Dirk for their great careers. We're going to talk about them a little bit. Just discuss whether or not, you know, the NBA should shorten the season. You know, 82 games, like Ansel was saying, it's kind of taxing. You know, these players are playing 82 games a night, a lot of back-to-backs. It's kind of hard to go all 82, and then, you know, fans want to see that. So maybe if you shorten that a couple games, it'd be, you know, a little bit better for the consumer, but we'll talk about that more. We're just going to give a full playoff preview now that we have, you know, the seeding, you know, stamped in now. We know we have the matchups. We're going to, you know, discuss those. And then we're going to give our end of the season awards. You know, we're going to kind of put a little twist on it here at TNT Hoops. Not just going to do the, you know, MVP and most improved. We're going to put a little twist on it. So we'll really get into that, you know, as we go through those. And that's pretty much going to be the show for today. So,
yeah, let's get into
the good stuff.
Yeah, so this week is kind of a bittersweet week for us as NBA fans, two guys that have been a part of our lives, our basketball lives for, I guess, since we've been alive, damn near, basically, like 2 or 3 years afterwards. Dirk came into the league 1998 as a rookie.
98?
Yeah. 21 total seasons. Finished off his last game, as we said, the other night with 20-10-1 against the Phoenix Suns.
Won what?
He had one assist, so, you know, he wasn't really swinging a ball. Everything was going up when it touched his hand, but
better not in the last game. Same thing Wade was doing.
Yeah, for Wade, he had 25, 11, and 10.
Yeah, triple-double. It was only his fifth career triple-double, too. So
yeah, nice to do with the banana boat game.
He said he wanted to do it, too. He said before the game, he said, I'm going to try to go get a triple-double. He said Kobe, he's like, Kobe, you know, Kobe got 60. He raised the bar too high. I brought it back down. Just get a light little triple-double and you cool. But, yeah, just to talk about these two guys, man, I think they just, you know, meant so much to the game of basketball. You know, it's just starting with Dirk, obviously being that stretch forward that kind of changed the game, you know. So many guys now, so many bigger dudes, the Kevin Durant that came in the league. You know, Dirk paved the way for all these guys to play that game. You know, it being okay to be a big guy shooting the ball and, you know, not necessarily, you know, working on a block, or even though Dirk could, you know, work you off on a block, but he's shooting that, you know, that fadeaway,
yeah,
you know, off one leg, the unstoppable shot.
He just showed his knee right into you, fading right back.
Right. He just showed at seven feet, you could still have that touch and, you know, impact the game from the perimeter, and he kind of paved that way. And then D-Wade, just being that guy that came after, you know, after Kobe. You had Jordan, you had Kobe was in the league, and then he kind of passed the torch to D-Wade, who was like the OG shooting guard in the league after he was done. So, you know, just that, you know, the finals run D-Wade had with LeBron and his run he had before that when he had Shaq his first year after he came from the Lakers. D-Wade put together a hell of a career.
Yes, but so let's go over it. Yeah. For Dirk, he was sixth all-time in scoring with 31,560 points.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sixth all-time out of everybody that played basketball. This dude, only five people.
Incredible accomplishment. For the playoffs, 3,633 playoff points. which is ranks as 16th all time. 14-time All-Star, 12-time All-NBA guy, one of the only guys with an MVP in the regular season, and also one of the finals. The regular season one came in, I think, 2007. I think that year they went 67-15. But
they lost first round, though.
Yeah, first round.
They lost first round,
2-4 to Golden State. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't remember who was on that team. It was like Baron Davis, I think.
Baron Davis team, yeah.
Yeah, guys like that. But then he was able to bounce back in 2011 against that Miami Heat team, D-Wade, Bosh, and our guy LeBron James.
Steven Jackson was on that Warriors team with Baron Davis.
Yeah.
He's always talking about it on those shows. But now, keep going, my bad. You're talking about the LeBron James series when they faced the Heat and Gusson.
Yeah. One of the cool accomplishments, just kind of looking back to that series. We talked about this earlier. That team was just a well-oiled machine with Marion, Jason Kidd, and
right.
Jason Terry.
Not overly talented, but the chemistry and just that mix of not even really a mix, because they blew that team up after that year, because Terry was old, Chandler was
Chandler was Defensive Player of the Year that year.
Yeah, that's so not overly talented, but just like a well-oiled machine. Like, everybody had their role. Dirk was the dude that was getting the buckets. Marion was that two-way player. Chandler was that threat. You know, that lob threat and lockdown defender. Yeah, and
protected the rim.
And then you had Jason Terry, who would just shoot the shit out of the ball and just score the ball, fill it up for you. And then you had Jason Kidd running the show. So, I mean,
Dirk,
that team was
one of the cool things.
Dirk led that squad.
So, he shot 97% from the line that series, 45 of 46.
In the championship, right?
Yeah, the final series, which is, that just kind of shows you the kind of the level he was playing, averaging 26 and 9. Going toe-to-toe with LeBron and those
he
guys.
He was so legit in that series, man. Yeah.
So shout
45
out to
45 for 46 from the line.
A question I wanted to ask you, if you had to judge the career, not the player that was the most exciting to watch, but who had a better career, D-Wade or Dirk, if you had to just take it as overall, who would rank higher on your all-time list?
Me, personally, I say D-Wade. Okay. By no means do I think this is like by a landslide or this is not a comparison, but just because of Dirk's resume, I mean, six all time, like in scoring, that's so legit.
But stay with D-Wade. Why would you say D-Wade?
Why would I say D-Wade? Three time champion.
Okay.
You know, he got his solo one, you know what, in his third year.
Semi solo. Shaq was still...
It's not semi-solo.
Shell of Shaq, but Shaq was still force to be reckoned with.
He averaged 35 in a championship. Like, he willed them back. They beat the Mavs.
Yeah, they were
like,
down.
They came back from down 2-0. In his third year in the league, he willed them back. Like, and that fight, that championship run, that whole playoffs was elite. And the year before that, it was elite. If he didn't get hurt, they would have made some noise that year, too. So, I mean, that was the year after, actually. But just being so young and taking over, and then you bring up LeBron alongside and kind of teach him, you know, how to really mold a team. And he was closing those games. People forget LeBron's the best team player on that team, but Wade was closing those games.
In the first year, but I think in that second year, like the year they won on that 27-game win streak.
No, that's why they were good, because Wade gave Brown a team, but it was still Wade's team when it was time. They all knew their roles. Like, when it was time to win in time, Wade had the ball, Brown stayed in the corner. He called him up there, hey, come get this. Handed it to him, go stand in the corner. I mean, they both made plays, but if you want somebody to score down a stretch, they were going to wait.
So do you weigh that more than Dirk kind of being the sole contributor or the sole guy that pushed that?
I mean, they've had tons of great teams in Dallas. Tons. That organization does a great job of bringing guys in that can
I just think that feat and accomplishment maybe just is a little more impressive to me. Like, even though he just has one, but he won an MVP, but winning against those three guys that we're naming.
Yeah, I mean, their first year together, not that significant, not that good of a roster overall. They were top heavy.
Still, those are three all-time guys on one team.
And that's fine. Like, I think I take Dirk over Chris Bosh. Would you not?
Obviously, but
it's you're saying obviously, so he's what, the third best player in that series with a complete team that, like I said, like we were saying before, they were well oiled. Like, that was a legit, you had Kidd, you had Terry, like, these are all guys that have been there before. Like, the Heat team just got put together that year. Yeah. You feel me? So Listen.
Yeah, we just saw it, like, because we watched a little bit of it before we started recording, and, like, they were stuck with guys like Joel Anthony, Udonis Haslem having to guard Dirk at the elbow extended, I mean, and he was just exposed. Like, I feel like the Mavs kind of just spread out, not to the four corners, but Dirk was just able to operate by himself, and, like, those guys were just on the island. And
I mean, even look at their guard play. They had Mario Chalmers and Norris Cole. Like,
yeah,
you know, you got Barea. I mean, he doesn't seem like much now.
Man. Huh? The chicks used to love Norris Cole.
The chicks?
Yeah.
I don't know. No chick not love Norris Cole. He any ball, but nah, I mean.
That's box.
Huh? That box, yeah. LeBron, as soon as he left LeBron, I didn't really hear much about him. He played for the Pelicans for a little bit. Yeah. But still, we're going to stay on Wade and Dirk. I mean, I take Wade over Dirk. I mean, he's a perimeter player. That's always more important in my book. So he has more of a stamp on the game because he handles the ball. He's more of a two-way player. Dirk was never known as a great defender or even a good defender. Wade was a great defender pretty much his whole career. Mm. Like I said, the championship factor, the consistency throughout the career. I mean, Dirk was obviously super consistent. But
I think that's the one thing that I wouldn't say matches it. Dirk from 2000 to 2012, around 23 points a game in all of those years. Like, that's pretty consistent, like 23 and 10.
From 2000, what is it?
So I'm looking right now on Basketball Reference from 2000 to 2012. I'm not going to go all the way down it, but 22 and up consistently.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Wade has a 10-year stretch of the same thing, or 8-year stretch of... We can, but it's not loading right now for me. But I mean, I'm pretty sure he has a consistent stretch of the same thing. What was Dirk doing and winning at the end of the day? And you can do all that in the regular season. That's fine. You can get your numbers. He's a good perimeter shooter. He was going to score the ball regardless. There's no defense for a good shooter at 7 feet. But as far as leading a franchise and that, I take D. Wade.
Yeah, definitely close. Again, like, this isn't just because making the case for Dirk.
Who are you taking?
I think I like Dirk's story a little bit more. I just like the totality of the career. Wade is more interesting to me as a player. And
What story are you talking about?
So coming over from Germany as a guy who a lot of people didn't really know about and realize, the Mavericks take a flyer on him, like.
Yeah, I feel you.
What do you mean?
Like, that's a narrative that's built, man. Who cares?
Up until 2000.
D-Wade wasn't even supposed to be this good.
So 2007, everyone, like a lot of the old guys this week have been talking about, they didn't think Mark Stein and Simmons were just talking about, people thought Dirk was soft and was like ass and wasn't going to be able to win a championship. And then to be able to, after Nash left.
They snuck one.
That's not sneaking one in. Like, yo, you beat LeBron Wade. Like, yo, you really trying to make it sweet. Like, you beat LeBron Wade.
I'm not trying to make anything sweet. I thought the Mavericks were going to win that series.
He was born.
I'm being completely honest with me.
And that like, having that MVP, like, I'm sorry, Wade doesn't have one of those in it. Like, that does mean something when you kind of judge. Like,
what did Dirk average MVP here?
I'll go back to. So that was,
because it's all about time, and I can almost guarantee Kobe had better numbers than him that year.
Yeah, well, we know why Kobe didn't get it that year.
Well, don't throw no MVP in my face then, bro.
He averaged 25, 9, 4 assists or 3 assists.
That's...
Effective field goal rate of 53. Oh, yeah, so it's debatable. And the top, Dirk, for me, Dirk is definitely top 20. That's where it kind of just sits and resides for me.
For me, Wade is top 15, top 20, that range, anywhere. Yeah.
We'll give you guys a list soon, but we'll leave that there. What do we got next? For the season, yeah. So the NBA shortened the season. We're kind of just looking at some of the guys like Kawhi and Embiid, who are superstar players, but at the end of the day, we didn't get to see them on a night-to-night basis because the 82-game season is just stressful and teams would rather have their guys fresh for the playoffs. And so I think for me, the question arose just because, like, how do you determine which guy should make All-NBA or who should be in the contention for Defensive Player of the Year when some guys like Harden and Giannis are playing 77-plus games. So just give me your thoughts on the NBA season, how it's currently constructed, and if we should keep it the same, should we shorten it, and if so, by how many?
Yeah, I mean, just to say, I mean, if it was less than 82, like if you took, you know, say 7 games off and made it a 75 game season, I definitely think it would help the league. It would help the players for the reasons you just named.
Players play more is, I guess, like if you shorten it to 75.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you have to play more. There's less games and you have to compete. And those last 7 games that you play for the playoffs and you come down the stretch, like those aren't there anymore. So each game means a little bit more when there's less games. Regardless if it's 2 games less, 3 games less, or 7 games less, 10 games less, you have to play more. Think about it. If you play 70 out of 75 games or 70 out of 82 games,
your winning percentage would stay close to the same. Like the top teams would still be the top teams. Like it wouldn't just mean like it would matter for the bottom feeder teams, is I guess what I'm thinking. Like for those teams,
I mean, it would matter for anybody. 7 games is a lot of games, bro. It would matter for pretty much the whole league. I mean, it'd be
been in that 3 spot for longer than 7. Like I'm just saying, for like the teams that matter. Would it affect, like, Kawhi Leonard is still going to, like, how many, he missed 22 games this year, right? I think he would still miss close to the same amount.
So many games were you thinking that, how many games would you shorten it to?
So what, the lockout year was, how many games were in the lockout year?
Not sure.
Like, I think it was, like, around, like, 59 or 60-something games. I think it would be around there, like, 65, like, okay. 65 to 68 range. Right, like
so you, yeah. I mean, that's why do you say that? Like, that's putting pressure on the players to pretty much play every game. So I think the reason I said 75 is you still get that leeway, as you know, you can take a couple games off and rest. It's still the best league in the world, most professional basketball league, the best basketball league in the world. They can play.
That 2011 lockout year was 66 games, right? And so I think it benefited because the Spurs won the championship that year. I'm pretty sure, right? Yeah. The Spurs won the championship that year. So, like, just having, like, a shortened season, it kind of just, like, I don't, like, it gives the old guys a chance. Not the old, like, the old guys, but the guys who are, like, 28, 29, like, in their 30s, like, guys like LeBron, there's no point of him having.
Those guys still win anyway. But hold on, let me not cut you off, but. So we agree that they should shorten the season. It's just a matter of how much games. Yeah, and so I don't think
that's not relative.
I don't think it should be 65 games, like 66. It has to be at 70 in the 70 range, 70 to 75, just because it's still the best league in the world. Fans still want to see the games. They should play a high volume of games as compared to like other leagues around the world. I think 70, like I said, 70 to 75 is like a good range for me. I'm not taking it all the way down to 65. Because then that's putting pressure on the players to pretty much play every game, because you're putting so much more meaning on every single night if you're only playing 65 games. So,
Correct myself, the Heat won the championship in that lockout year.
The lockout year?
Yeah.
What year was that? 2012?
2011, 2012.
Yeah. They were going crazy in the summertime, bro. LeBron, KD, all them. All right, so we're going to move on to our next topic. It's basically going to give you guys our playoff predictions and our, you know, our preview. So let's get right into it. You know, there's a lot of series, so let's, you know, get through these. So first off, we got, you know, the Clippers and Warriors out west, the 1-8 matchup. Who you got?
For me, Warriors in 4 or 5. 5 would be the gentleman's sweep. I don't think.
No, we can't. So this is the rule. It's 1 rule for this.
Okay.
So let's try to stay sharp and let's try to remember this, you know, on a podcast. We're going to. It's no 4 or 5. It's 4 or 5. Like,
okay.
Boom. So we can go back and be like, bang, you were right on that series. And good call on that one.
Yeah.
So
what do you got? Just do who had, like, I guess we'll be able to
the
tally
most.
Up.
Yeah, we can tally it, right up. All right.
I say Golden State in 4. I don't think the Clippers have enough firepower to get a game. Like, Golden State could just turn it on at the end of every night.
Right.
Which I think they will.
Yeah. 100%.
Hopefully Curry doesn't miss a game, because if he does, that can kind of ruin that prediction. But what do you have?
Yeah, I don't look at things like that if somebody misses a game. So I have the Warriors in 4, barring injury. Obviously, I'm not looking at it. Saying Steph or whoever gets hurt. Like, they're fully full strength. Both teams full strength. Warriors clean sweep. Playing better basketball to end the season. Clippers were a good regular season team.
Yeah, 48-34. Good year from Doc Rivers. Coaching year for him.
Yeah, they're deep. 50 wins. They're a deep team, young team. A lot of guys with a chip on their shoulder. So, you know, they play hard. Got a score on Lou Williams, but that won't be enough, you know, to win any games in this series.
And I think personally, a good point for this series for them is it's kind of like a showcase just for, like, them to, you know, to
potential free agents,
a.k.a. Kawhi Leonard. But let's move on to the next series.
KD, too. Jimmy Butler.
We have Houston and Utah next. What do you got?
So, I have Houston in six.
Okay.
And I would have Houston in five, having them win on their home court in game five. But I just give a little bit more respect to, you know, the Jazz and that. I think the Jazz can potentially steal a game in Houston early on and, you know, prolong the series a little bit longer. But I think this is one of those series where, you know, once Harden starts getting his, you know, starts flowing, Chris Paul starts getting shots going, and you got the Eric Gordons making shots, which I think will happen in this series because I think it's going to be a series where they have to stay on the perimeter a little bit more. Not a little bit more. You can't really stay on the perimeter more than the Rockets already do.
Yeah.
But with Gobert down there, you know, that everything's going to have to work from the outside and they're going to have to make shots. And I think D'Antoni knows that, you know, getting up and down the floor. So I have Houston winning this in six. I think, like I said, once Harden gets going, I don't think Utah has enough firepower. They have Donovan Mitchell, but he's not matching James Harden and the rest of those guys when that team's really clicking. So I got Houston in six.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Utah improves a little bit off of last year, 4-1 last year in the Western Conference semifinals. I like what Quinn Snyder has done this year when they've played the Rockets. They're 2-2 against them this year. Like you said, like Gobert has kind of stifled everything. He's able to play Harden when he kind of gets by his man at the rim and then also be able to kind of defend the oop too, which is rare for a big man. However, Harden is averaging 34-7-5 against them this year. So I think for Utah to maybe have a chance and for them to maybe push it to seven, there's going to have to be a lot of elite magic from Donovan Mitchell. He's going to have an all-time series, kind of just like how we said Wade had in his third year in the playoffs. But
inefficient.
Yeah.
Well,
he's been
Donovan Mitchell, yeah. He's been, like, this last month or so, he's been shooting, like, 44% from three. I saw a stat, 44% in the last month or so. So, I mean, he's starting to shoot the ball well. He's a gamer. Like, that's, I mean, Donovan Mitchell, you can look at the inefficiency, but at the end of the day, you can just see he's a hooper. He's a gamer. So,
and I think with a year under their belt, like guys like Royce O'Neal, Crowder, and Mitchell, like, I'm not saying they can defend Harden, but like seeing it, this is now the second full year of them seeing it, so it will help them.
None of them men are guarding James Harden.
He's still going to get his 30-plus, but it helps, you know. Experience helps. The next series we have is Portland versus OKC. I think this is the best series of the playoff round, East-West, but who do you got?
I got OKC winning on their home floor in six games. I think this is going to be a hard-fought six-game series.
Okay.
Portland is an interesting team because they had it rolling and they look better than they have in the past. Altogether, from top to bottom, they look better than they have in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years here with how deep their team is. So, with Nurkic getting hurt, it kind of just gives them, you know, it pushes them back a little bit. Now having to play Cancer. Myers Leonard. So
Zach Collins, Zach product.
Yeah, I mean, they're all solid, you know, guys. You play 15 minutes a night, but they're not that starting center that you need to go against Steven Adams and, you know, the Thunder team. So, I got the Thunder in six. I believe in Russell Westbrook and Paul George in this series. I think they'll just be a little bit too much for Damian Lillard and CJ. I think CJ will be a little bit overwhelmed just coming off that injury, too. So, I'm going OKC in six.
Okay. This is our first series where we differ. I have OKC in five. First game is on Sunday at 3:30. I think just for Portland, even after the Nurkic injury that happened on the 25th of March, like, then they've been 7-2 since then, and they've played a little bit better than we've expected. I just don't particularly believe in Dame and CJ, and I was one of the guys that thought they should have blown it up this year with those two. But I think they've fallen off a lot inside. I think OKC, I think Russ just, he has the ability to give a guy like Dame problems, and Dame's still gonna get his. But if you defend it correctly, like New Orleans did last year, like hedging hard as soon, like when they try to set that high screen, like they gave Dame an issue, and then made everyone else beat them. And CJ played well, but the other guys like Al-Farouq Aminu and Cantor, who was playing last year, just didn't step up to the plate, and so they have a big void to fill.
Cantor was not on their team last year.
Not Cantor, I'm sorry, Nurkic.
Nurkic.
Oh, yeah. But, like, now with Nurkic gone, like, they have a huge void that they're missing. One at that kind of, like, foul line extended, like, kind of making the play to the corner or going to the basket. And I just don't see a way that they can kind of just fix that. You know, it's kind of a leak that's going to sink the ship.
Yeah, until they blow it up. Yeah, so, okay. Next series we got is San Antonio and Denver.
Okay.
I got the Nuggets in seven.
Wow.
Yeah, I
got love the Nuggets that. In seven. All right, explain. All right, so I had the Spurs in six, but since you took the favorite, I'll let you state your case for Denver and Mike Malone and those guys.
I think they get it done. They're deep. Denver is really deep. They could play, you know, 9-10 guys. You know, they share the ball. You know, they clearly have the formula to win basketball games. They were a 2 seed in the West pretty much all year. You know, and I believe in Jokic to how do I want to put this? I believe in Jokic to put his print on the series. You know, just being that triple-double, effective, efficient, you know, big dude that's going to score inside, you know, stretch the floor and just have their whole team click, and they have home court advantage. I think this is going to be one of those series where, you know, no team wins on the other. No, every home, the home team's going to win every game. It's going to go 2-2, 1-1-1.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm looking at it to be one of those series, and I got the Nuggets in seven.
Okay. To respond to that,
and I only have the Spurs. I think the Nuggets, from top to bottom, are a better team than the Spurs. But, you know, I think the Spurs may have, you know, two of the more experienced of the talented players, and, you know, DeRozan and
Aldridge.
Aldridge.
Yeah, but
and then the Greg Popovich effect.
But you stamped your flag in Denver, so
yeah, right, yeah, I'm saying Denver and seven.
I got San Antonio just for those reasons you stated. You have, I think, the best or second best coach in the league right now, in Greg Popovich. I would say the best. And just given what they've done this year, kind of against Denver, I think that, yeah, I have it right here. They're 2-1 against Denver this year. And I went back today and watched that last game to where they lost and Pop got thrown out early. It's typical Pop, just real vanilla game plan. It kind of seemed like the Spurs kind of.
What does that even mean,
bro? Like, it's just
typical,
like,
Pop, real vanilla game. You
know, like, so he did this 2 years ago as well. Like when they were about to play the Warriors, like the last time they played,
just
the
not
Warriors,
showing them,
he just didn't show anything. Yeah. And it's like they had already beaten them twice in the year, and I saw spots as to where they could take Jokic out of the game. I think.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I know that the way you brought it in was so smooth. I was like, you said quick vanilla game plan. I'm like, oh, what? Start thinking about ice creams. go ahead.
Like, I think there's a way that Pop can scheme Jokic out. So like that top of the circle action where we're talking about Dirk earlier, but they put Jokic in the kind of that same spot, and he's way better pass than Dirk ever was, and they just have a bunch of guys just cutting off of it.
Right.
And the Spurs are really disciplined, so I don't think Denver's gonna be able to get a lot of those easy, like Jamal Murray just beating this guy backdoor layup or Jokic just tossing to the top.
Right.
The Spurs will be able to take that away, hopefully. I think DeRozan, I think Pop has a plan for DeRozan this year, man, and to put him in spots to where he can get close to 25 a night in the playoffs. Because at the end of the day, in the playoffs, you do need two guys to really.
For a guy, homeboy, be full and like origami in the playoffs. Yeah. That's definitely a factor in this series. Because he's been less of a scorer this year. He's been more of an all around player. Some games you look at his, I think he had two triple-doubles back-to-back games, I think, this year, and, like, they were, like, I don't know if it was back-to-back, but I think it was, like, in the same, like, you know, few weeks or whatever, mm-hmm. and they were, like, the only ones of his career. So, it's like, yeah, they definitely have him playing differently there, but.
And he's taken less threes this year. I think Pop is just making him just go towards his strengths, which is Like I don't know. Like I think Pop is not
even so much about threes, but he's just not scoring as much. So I mean, we'll see. Not even about not scoring as much. This man, I don't know if it was LeBron, but his playoff career has not been up to par to guys at his standard.
Yeah, but if there's one guy that can get you in the mindset and get you in the right spots to be productive in the playoffs,
it's Greg Popovich, right?
And the way, like, so, and like, they just have guys like Patty Mills, Dante, like, it's just, they're deep. But we shall see. I think that's, it is the first series where we've had completely different winners, so I'm excited to see that.
Yep.
Let's move on to the Eastern Conference.
We're going to go Bucks, who's... Who got Bucks Pistons?
Yeah, Bucks Pistons.
Pistons.
The Pistons, after we recorded, I think it was episode 12, and we were talking about them maybe even competing for the sixth seed with Brooklyn. Right. And since then, they lost four games, two to Indiana, one to OKC, Charlotte. They barely got in last night, had to beat the Knicks and have a couple other things go their way. I think this season's just kind of going downhill. I feel bad for Casey. Blake's had a bad left knee the past month or so. Drummond's been inconsistent, but that's what happens when you build your team around two big guys. It's kind of a crap shot.
Remember last year when they traded for Blake and they were like, Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, like scary big man tandem. I'm like, yo, how is that even scary? Like, who's afraid of that?
Van Gundy,
Reggie Jackson is the point guard.
I don't know
who you got in this series. Then
I have Milwaukee in four.
Yeah, same. I got a clean sweep. That's going to be easy work. Get the brooms out.
Yeah.
Giannis is going to dominate. They have nobody that can stay in front of him. I don't think there's anybody in the league that can stay in front of him, but they have nobody in specifically.
Yeah, they particularly have just...
So, you know, hopefully a big series from, you know, Blake Griffin, but he seems to be struggling right now. So.
Yeah. He couldn't even play that last night.
In the most meaningful game of the year.
Yeah. All right. But... we shall see. The next series we have down the line is Boston and Indiana. Boston at 49-33 in the year. Indiana started off the year strong. Oladipo obviously got hurt, but Nate McMillan was able to kind of keep them in that 3-5 range. Give me your prediction for that series.
I have Boston in seven games.
Wow. Okay. So we differ on this, but also I have Boston in five. Tell me why you have it going an extended series.
No, you tell me why you got it going far.
I think Indiana is slowly starting to just unravel. Wesley Matthews kind of stabilized him a little bit when he got there towards the trade deadline. But I think Boston has started to figure it out a little bit over this last month and a half. I think Kyrie is just a different animal in the playoffs. He can hop into one of those top five guys.
Mm-hmm. No doubt, yeah.
Just in the playoffs sure. alone.
Especially being a guard. Like, I always say that the guards impact the game more because they're the primary ball handlers. Yeah. They put their stamp on the game. And if he's a point guard, he can score the ball like that. It's like he's putting pressure on the defense from the jump every possession. You know, even if he's, you know, not scoring on possession, just getting somebody involved or getting a hockey assist, just his presence alone, being on the perimeter, just being a Sixers fan now and seeing, you know, your point guard can't shoot, he has to go stand next to the basket. You understand how important that is.
Yeah. This is a little jaded because Smart is now, we were learning the news today, he has like a torn, like something oblique. Yeah, torn oblique.
Yeah.
So he's going to be out for the first round and maybe a piece of the second round. But I think this is a good opportunity to get Jaylen Brown some extra minutes. We were talking about that earlier. I think he's been kind of robbed this year just of his playing time for how well he played last year. But he stayed consistent. Gordon Hayward has kind of come along a little bit. So I think Boston just kind of takes care of business quickly because they know they're going to have their hands full with Milwaukee. And seeing Milwaukee sweep Detroit, you know, you're going to have to get in and out of the series.
So I'm going to be quick with this one. I think Indiana surprised. I said this on the last part. I think Indiana surprises everybody. They play defense, right? And on their home court, they're going to be tough to beat because they guard. And they're a team that, you know, they're a balanced scoring team. Even with Oladipo and even without them, they're more of a balanced scoring team. You don't know who, you know, who's going to have a big night. They just kind of do it together collectively as a group. And any team that plays defense, that's just going to help you in the playoffs, obviously. So I think, you know, they win a couple games. I don't know if that's going to be on Boston's floor or if they just going to go back and forth. But I think Indiana wins three games in the series. But just to ask you, you have Boston at five. How you see that? You see Boston splitting those first two and then winning the next two
No,
in Boston?
I see all these games being particularly close until late in the fourth quarter, and I just think that Boston has too many guys, and they just close out the first two games at home. They go to Indiana.
Oh yeah, Boston is home.
Yeah,
Okay,
so
yeah.
Boston's the four, so
Right.
they go to Indiana, they split there, one
Okay.
takes one back home to
And then
Boston,
go
and
back
then yeah,
home
go
and win the
home and
game
close it
five.
out.
Got you. Got you.
Next series we have our home team, the Philadelphia 76ers, show your love versus the Brooklyn Nets at 42-40. What are your thoughts?
All right. First of all, stop saying show your love, bro. It's not 2010. What year was to show your love? That was like,
That was our Jrue Holiday, Evan Turner. Was that the year
yeah.
we? I think that was the year we beat the Bulls when Derek.
Show your love. That was a while back though. Like I remember, like the team was like this was like pre-processed, like
Yeah,
before like
we weren't
even
tanking
knew about
yet.
Embiid. I think it was that Evan Turner's like show your love was that.
Yeah.
So stop saying that. That's bad vibes.
No, that's not bad vibes. That's
Nah, it
just
is.
that's history,
Nah,
baby.
but it's bad
That's
vibes. It's not a good time in the Sixers tenure. But
yeah.
anyway,
Still show your love,
we are
baby.
trusting this process. Process is over, but still going.
All
Process
right,
has
getting to
not.
your point, nigga. Come on.
Listen, I have the Sixers in five.
Sixers and
Philly
five.
in five.
But Cootie, that goes against everything the analysts have been saying all week. Everyone thinks that maybe this could be the upset of the playoffs first
And
round.
I'm going to tell you why it's not.
That was just my analyst voice, my Stephen A.
We got the
Best analyst.
7'2 dude named Joel Embiid. He can't be guarded by anybody on the roster. I think he's just going to overpower,
At all.
especially if he's healthy. It's playoff time. It's time to go. Fiercest competitor in the league, one of, for sure. I think that's just going to be the deciding factor. I mean, I think Brooklyn plays eight, nine guys legitimately, but
Yeah.
we just have five guys that are better than everybody they have for the most part. So that's probably D'Lo and Dinwiddie. So, filling in five, what you got?
I have Philly in six. Just because I think we are that team that, like, for some reason, like, it takes a little bit for us to wake up, and so I think we could probably win the first two games at home, but I can definitely see us splitting one, like splitting the first home games, going to Brooklyn, winning two. Brooklyn comes back to Philly, wins one, and then we have to go close it out in Brooklyn just because things are getting serious. We don't want the series to go any further than it is. But as you said, Embiid just destroys Brooklyn when he plays them. Averages 13, 14, and 5. No, not 13,
Oh,
30, 40,
30. Okay.
30, 14, and 5. I'm sorry, I
Whew, about to
misspoke.
say 13. Dang, Joe.
Jared Allen and Hollis Jefferson are just too small. Guys like Ed, they sometimes try to put Ed Davis on him.
Jared Allen can guard though, but
Just,
they just babies.
yeah, like they look like they're 6'5 next to Embiid sometimes.
Man.
I think this is going to be a good series for Butler. Butler's kind of just been resting the past couple of weeks. I think he's going to get going. And when I say get going now on the offensive end, but I think we're really going to get to see like how well he guards. He's going to be on Dinwiddie, I think, for a majority of the series, and
Yeah, Dinwiddie and Russell, he's gonna guard them a lot.
he's just kind of, I don't know. I think this is where he's going to earn his contract for the summer coming up, and I think Jimmy's kind of been preparing for that. He's a smart guy, veteran guy,
Right.
and it starts in the playoffs. As you said, Brooklyn has a lot of depth with LeVert, Russell, Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, but I don't think that will cause us any issue. But six games, just because of the team we are. Let's go to that last series.
Last series, you got Toronto and Orlando. Toronto Raptors, Orlando Magic. Toronto Raptors. I got the Raptors in five. In five. I don't have it written down yet. I thought I wrote it down, but the Raptors in five. Like I've said before on this podcast, the Toronto Raptors are the deepest team in the NBA. They can legit play 10 guys. And I think they can continue to do that in the playoffs. I don't think they will. You'll ensure your rotation a little bit to, eight or nine. But
Not even
those.
8 or 9, probably for them. Probably yeah. Well, yeah, for
Eight or
them they go
nine.
8 or 9, but
Yeah.
for normal teams it's probably down to 7, 8.
Man, so you do eight or nine, and, they have eight or nine solid guys. So, a team like Orlando,
And congrats to
congrats
them for
to
just
making
making
it.
the
That's what I'm
playoffs. Yeah,
saying. It's like, it's. That's, I think, the vibe they have right now. obviously you're playing with fire. Like you have nothing to prove, you have nothing to lose. You're just going out there and playing, which you don't know what you don't know as the Magic. But I just think Toronto's, you know, too deep of a team. They want to kind of make quick work of this series and get ready to play Philly next round, or Philly, the winner of Philly and Brooklyn. So I got Toronto getting this series done in a gentleman's sweep in five.
Yeah, I have Toronto in four here. I think Orlando, just of being, you know, finally making the playoffs in the first time in, what, since the Dwight years, Dwight, J.J. Redick.
Yeah.
They definitely made the playoffs after that year. No, they went to the finals. Really? They went from making the finals to not making the playoffs.
I mean, he was on the team after he was on the team after they didn't make the finals. I mean, he was on the team after they made the finals and they didn't, and they made the playoffs. Like, he didn't leave right away, did he?
Dwight?
Yeah, he didn't leave like after they won, like after they lost the chip that
year. No, he definitely
was still there for probably 2 or 3 years.
Okay, but yeah, I don't see enough in Orlando. Vucevic is their best player, but I think to nullify that, he has to go up against Pascal Siakam and Marcus Gasol and Ibaka. Like, that's just it. It's tough.
He cooking them. He's not cooking them, but I can't
see a game in which they just outplay Toronto. Toronto, I think, has a lot to prove, more than any other team in the East, in my opinion. After last year, but
yeah, I just see Orlando winning a game in Orlando. That place is going to be electric, like these guys say, very electric. But
weird night, like Evan Fournier has like 45.
Yeah, they got dudes that can hoop. They got a couple, like Terrence Ross. Like, dude, they got a couple guys that can put the ball in the basket. That's why they compete.
Yeah, a shame they haven't been able to work in Bamba this year. You would think that Clifford would have been able to figure out a way to get him involved.
He'll be all right. He's probably just too young right now. Too young, too frail. He'll be all right. Yeah. But that wraps up, you know, our playoff predictions.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. Like, it may not sound like it because it's a little late when we're recording this, but just this is the best time in sports, in my opinion. We got to see the average level product of college basketball. It was a great tournament towards the end, but on a night-to-night basis, the NBA playoffs are just
incredible. Yeah, the first week.
My couch.
Yeah, the first week is insane. I love the playoffs, obviously, NBA, obviously speaking. But like you said, it's the best time of the year. People look at it like, oh yeah, I mean, we know the Warriors are gonna win. I mean, yeah, you can say that, like, they're favorites, but there's favorites in every sport.
Yeah.
Like, you think the Patriots are gonna win every year, but you still watch to see if somebody can top it. Like, it is what it is.
That's the meaning of sports, because right. Like, you don't want to say, oh, I'm not watching the playoffs this year because the Warriors are gonna win it, and then find out, oh, Houston actually was able to pull it out in 70, and you missed that whole series in the build up, and you're just stuck watching the
highlights. Exactly, because you know you're gonna watch it anyway and root against them. Yeah. But let's move on. So. Like I said earlier, we want to do like an award show on TNT Hoops here, but we want to switch it up and put a little twist on it. So the first, you know, award we want to do is simple. The NBA has been doing this award forever, but the only thing is there's been different meanings, and people kind of debate what the meaning actually is of the MVP, the most valuable player in the NBA. So, you know, breaking the actual meaning down, you think most valuable player, like the most valuable to their team in the NBA. So that's the first one. That's the first thing we're going to say is, you know, who we think our most valuable player. Okay, so let's start off with simple. Let's start off with the MVP of the league this year.
So for our first TNT Hoops annual award show, the MVP this year for me is just Giannis. He's playing on the best team in the NBA. Right now with the Milwaukee Bucks, I think Budenholzer has just completely changed his game. Not completely, but he's expanded his game, averaging 28 points a game, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, close to 2 blocks a game. What else can you say, man? Like, this guy is just dominating around the rim, like, to the point where, like, I personally haven't – it's not like I watched Shaq a little bit as a kid, but, like, you don't – I personally don't consider those years of me really understanding basketball, but, like, for me being an adult, like, this is probably the most dominant I've seen somebody be on the inside and unstoppable. Like, we played him, and it's just – he's getting 45 on us when he decides to. And all while playing at the other end of the floor, and I think we kind of discredit it a little bit when we compare him and Harden, because he's held this consistency throughout the whole year, and we like to give Harden credit for getting out of that 13 spot and up until the three. But at the same time, he was playing all those games until they're up in 13 and 14. So we can't take that away from Giannis from being good throughout the whole year. What are your thoughts?
So, my MVP is James Harden. But I understand how the NBA gives these awards, and I already know they're giving the award to Giannis because they select the best story of the year. Hold on, sorry, I gotta sneeze.
It's all right. Take your time, good brother. I don't want your heart stopping. Bless you.
My bad. So
they'll say thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I know they're gonna give it to Giannis, just because he's the best story of the year. You know, the Bucks being, you know, making that big jump from last year. But I'll tell you why I think James Harden deserves it. 36 a game. There was 30 straight games where he scored 30. Like you said, those first 27 yeah, games?
They were 13 and 14.
So those first 27 games, you know, you got him in a whole year. Was Melo, they had Melo on the roster, right,
for the beginning of the year? I don't know if he was there for the
and duration. Once again, they were hurt. They were injured. And he went on that crazy run and took them all the way up the standings.
But the best thing is he was on the team to win. He could have been carrying them, so they weren't in that spot, is what I'm saying. But continue.
So the team was banged up. The roster was flawed. They were playing guys that weren't in their future plans. They got rid of Melo. And as soon as they got rid of Melo, they made some adjustments to their team, and they gave him the system. He brought them all the way back up. And they were playing, let's not forget, they're playing in the West, and Giannis is playing in the East. It's a completely different ballpark. Every team in the West, you don't get nights off in the West. Yeah. You can go play, you know, the Knicks and the Hawks and just get an easy dub in the East. In the West, there's no easy games like that. So, let's take that into consideration. Harden's my MVP. Like I said, Harden's my MVP.
Yeah. I think it's just tough because Harden's going to have, next to Jordan, one of the craziest scoring years of all time.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of leads into our next kind of under sub award from MVP is the best performance of the year, and I think that's where I would give to Harden, just because, as you said, the 30 straight games of 30 points or more, and he did go on a crazy run, and aesthetically for me as a basketball fan and viewer, it's definitely more impressive. I definitely watched a lot more Houston games this year than Milwaukee games, just because Milwaukee more times than not was blowing teams out by towards the end of the third quarter, and Houston was for the most part in close games, just like you said, on that run without Chris Paul, and like the game up in New York, that game shouldn't even have been close, and Harden ended up with 61. Like, so it's cool just to kind of watch somebody kind of just game the system and just break everything I knew about basketball and how a guy can dominate a game of basketball and kind of change that up. And I think in 10 to 15 years, the story that I'm going to remember more from the season is just how Harden kind of changed the game. This is one of those kind of monumental seasons, because you're going to see teams start to do this now. Like the Nets kind of have done it on a smaller scale with D'Angelo Russell, like kind of just letting him control the ball at the top of the key and just make all the decisions while LeVert was out. So I would give him best performance.
So I'm not even going to, you know, waste any time here. I 100% agree with what you said. You basically said it all. I mean, what he was able to do this year, we just haven't seen anything like that in basketball in, you know, the history of the game, at least in my lifetime. I saw Kobe, you know, his 35 point per game year, you know.
Yeah, but so compare the games. Like, obviously, Kobe's was a little bit underneath Harden's, but kind of compare.
I mean, Kobe averaged 35.7 and Harden averaged 36.1. So they're pretty much the same. They kind of leveled out, you know. At the end of the season, they leveled out, is what I'm saying.
So what was better for you to watch? Kobe dominating
from the
post.
The Harden, because I was a kid when Kobe, you know what I'm saying?
But you're still.
I was a kid when Kobe was playing. Like, I wasn't able to, you know, really comprehend how he really was scoring the ball and, like, what he was doing. But Harden is, you know, doing it on a better team, a higher seed team with playing for more at stake, you know. And his roster wasn't as bad as Kobe's roster.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it's different, for sure. It's just different. And I said, well, also, we should, you know, talk about the most valuable player in the league, like the actual term, most valuable, who's the most valuable to their team. I'm just going to start off, I think, you know, the most valuable player to their team is Joel Embiid. Just from what I saw throughout the year, when he didn't play, you took a team that was, you take, when Joel Embiid plays, you're taking a Sixers team that ceiling is a great team, a team that can compete for a championship. And when you take him off the floor, it's damn, the Brooklyn Nets can beat you in the first round. Yeah, like, it's definitely that crazy. So,
Definitely.
He just what he does on both ends of the floor, how he affects the game, alters shots, and then just dominates you on the offensive end. And the thing that makes him so unique is he's a center, but he's dominating you from the perimeter and on a block. So, you know, you just have to pick your poison on him, man. He's unstoppable on both ends. I think he's the most valuable player to his actual team. Yeah. And taking him off his team will make the most impact to any other player in the league.
Yeah, I second that. But just to kind of give a guy that is close to that impact is, I think, Kevin Durant. A lot of times we like to go and...
To the Warriors?
Yeah. Listen, the Warriors would still be good, and the Warriors would still probably make the Western Conference
Finals.
No,
they would be great still.
Yeah, great.
The Sixers would be horrible but without Joel.
How I interpreted your question is kind of like the most important player, and I think wherever Kevin Durant goes next year, he instantly makes that team viable to go to their conference finals. And so, like, yeah, he may not hurt the Warriors by leaving, but any other team he goes to instantly vaults up into that conversation. And so that's how I kind of...
I disagree with that.
No?
Yeah, I disagree with
that. So you don't think if he goes to New York and... Let's say he doesn't get Kyrie, but he gets Kemba. I think.
Yeah, I don't. No, I don't. I'm not writing him into the conference finals just because of the evidence I've seen of Kevin Durant trying to. Yeah, I'm saying the evidence I've seen of Kevin Durant trying to lead a team doesn't show me that would be the case.
Are you judging that off of the back end of OKC, or are you judging it off of this year when Curry?
I'm judging it off his OKC career. Period. He was never able to really grasp.
He's a different guy now, though.
Okay, but I'm saying I'm judging that off his OKC. Career period, and the Warriors, and no time in the Warriors, but the OKC, you know, the OKC stint, he wasn't ever able to grasp that franchise and take it, you know, and be that guy. They overshadowed him with Russ, and I mean, if he was a true superstar and true leader, you take that franchise, and Golden State, hear me out, in Golden State, I mean, you see when Steph's not out, I mean, when Steph's not playing, like. He's not. I mean, he's still scoring the ball. Like, that's the thing, that's he's still, you know, scoring the ball for him, but he's not impacting the game how a top, you know, top guy should. So I'm not saying you put Kevin Durant on the Knicks next year, or you put him on the Hornets or whatever. They're just a conference finals team. We've seen that with LeBron this year. You can go and get your numbers, but it's about how you gonna impact that team. I don't think Kevin Durant.
I think from everything I've heard
is that
and
guy.
Seen, yeah, like he now wants to kind of attempt to be that guy.
That's fine. That's fine. He could attempt to want to be.
Just looking at it, like, kind of just like his, like, shooting 58%, like, for effective field goal rate is crazy. Like, he'll do that in the offense. And I think he's capable of doing more. Like, we're seeing KD at the peak of his powers right now, and, like, he's really not even unleashing it as much as he wants. Like, last year in the final, he was going 38, easy, you know? And I think, like,
this is going to get into
the same amount of shots that Harden,
right?
You know,
so this gets into our next point, because I mean, I'm not sitting about the arguing, you know, what KD can do on a basketball court and how amazing he is. He's a unicorn of a basketball player. Yeah. I'm just talking about most valuable to the current team they're on. I don't think Kevin Durant's the most valuable player to the current team he's on. But, you know, the last thing we wanted to end with, you know, MVP, kind of giving it our twist, like I said, is just the best player. Not even MVP, just the best player in the league. Like, who do you think is just the best player in the league? Kind of sounds like KD.
Yeah.
From what you're saying.
I think
all around.
Yeah, even though we haven't seen it, like, and it's easy to go Giannis because he's having a better year, but I think, like, when you watch KD, like, it's just...
Yeah, Kevin Durant's the best player.
Yeah, you're not. And no one's going, like, he went toe-to-toe with LeBron James last year. And, like, obviously the series as a whole was a blowout, but he looked better than LeBron James. And there's no one else on the planet that has done that in recent memory, so.
Right, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But let's move on from that. I agree, KD's the best player in the league right now. Most complete game, top three, in my opinion. Top three pure scorer to ever play the game.
Just unstoppable. Like, yeah, I think that's just
seven foot guard. Top three shooter in league right now in terms of just jump shot. You know, being able to shoot from all three levels on the court. So yeah, I got KD being the best player in the league. But let's move on
for our next TNT Hoops annual awards.
I guess we should.
I mean, it's the first time, so these gonna be set in stones when they go back and listen to it. For defensive player of the year, overall, who do you give it to this year?
So overall, I'm gonna have to go with. See, it's tough though because I'm gonna give it to Giannis.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it to Giannis.
Give me your spiel.
I mean, he doesn't even get nearly enough credit for what he does on the defensive end. His ability to switch, you know, every position, and like his length is just something you can't teach. Yeah. You know what I mean? So he's contesting at the rim. He's sliding his feet on the perimeter. I'm giving defensive player of the year to Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Okay, I see the case for Giannis. For me, I give it to Paul George. Strictly, I know he kind of tailed off a little bit towards the end of the year, but I think a lot of that's just because of the wear and tear, and a lot of wear and tear comes from having to guard the best wing player on the opposing team in the West on a night-to-night basis. I think throughout the year, Paul George has just shown, averaging two steals per year, defensive rating of, I'll find that in a second, but like he's just, you see, like, and it's not even something I guess you can put into, like, as Giannis, like, where Giannis controls, literally, he can defend the rim, switch. Or, like, Paul George is just sturdy and locked down, you know? Like, you'll go on a stretch where he's guarding Harden, where it's like he's making Harden look human for a little bit. And we don't see that as much with Giannis, but I've seen Paul George do that over and over and over again. Like, I watched them against the Kings earlier in the year, and, like, Buddy Hill, before he checked in the game, Buddy Hill was on, like, a 6 to 8 point stretch. Paul George gets in, cools it right down. Like, being able to have a guy like that and then also flipping on the offensive end and do what he does.
Chill, we're not talking about
that. I know, we're not talking about the offensive end, but just to give him his due, 7 defensive rebounds a game, plus minus when he's on the floor, 6.4. So, and I think a lot of that's attributed to defense.
Right. Both of their numbers, though, you know, on and off the floor, Giannis and Paul George are two highest in the league.
Yeah.
And it has been, you know, consistently throughout the year. So, I'd say they're both, you know, solid picks for defensive players. So, if you were to pick a center in the league, who would you pick defensively for defensive player of the year? Because, you know, there's perimeter players. So, Giannis can be considered a perimeter defender, too, because he can guard on perimeter. Paul George is obviously a perimeter defender. So, if we were to talk about, like, a rim protector type.
Embiid. I know everyone likes to say Gobert and his at-rim numbers and percentages and all that.
Embiid can guard on the perimeter.
Yeah, I'm cool off Gobert, bro. Like, if I'm looking for a guy to make gravitation, like, game-changing defense, like, Gobert can do it as well, but Embiid is...
Like, Embiid literally, like, can legit switch out and guard.
Yeah,
like,
and he can get beat by a point guard off the dribble and recover and pin that shit on the glass. Like, there's just some certain things that Gobert is really good. I think that's just more of a product of Quinn Snyder's defense, and he has just him in the perfect spot all the time. Like, where it's just basically he's standing there with his hands up at the rim.
Waiting
more
to block.
Yeah, more times than not, which isn't a bad thing. Like, it's good because he's positioned well, and he's a really smart defender, but... Embiid just doesn't play. Like, if Embiid played 82 games, he'd be the clear-cut defensive player of the year, in my opinion. But he never will, so.
I agree. He just the Sixers, him being on the court on the Sixers in general, you see the difference. Like, you just see the difference. Like, he impacts the game that much. Because Sixers switch everything anyway. So, you know, when they're switching, he's getting out. He's guarding these guards where they're making, you know, actual crossovers.
Put it like this. Let me ask you a question that I already know the answer to. Could Rudy Gobert guard Giannis?
I mean, if you did the
for as long as Embiid guarded.
No, I'm saying if you did the tactic that the Sixers did, where you just put him in the paint. I mean, I think he could. If anybody else, like, no. He'd be able to do what Embiid is doing for the most part.
Because when
Giannis will overpower him. Giannis overnight. Yeah, Giannis overpowered Embiid. He would give him a little bump and push him off a spot and shoot a little flip shot over him. But
I think when Giannis got below the foul line, like, Embiid was still able to guard Giannis when, like, he was guarding him, like, on the baseline and stuff like that. I don't think Gobert's, like, has the capability to do, like any spot on the floor, Embiid was able to guard Giannis. Like, where I think there's, it would be certain locations where it's just like
Giannis. Embiid was playing ones in the summertime with Tatum and them. Like, he'd be playing ones with, like, wings and, like, dribbling and acting like, yeah. I got Embiid guarding. So let's move on.
Rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year. My rookie of the year is Luka Doncic.
Okay.
I think this race is very similar to last year, yeah, where you have Luka and a guy that's been consistent throughout the year. Ben Simmons was consistent throughout last year, but Luka's numbers on another level this year. You know, 25-5. He's like fourth, you know, rookie in NBA history to do it. Just been
21-5.
I'm saying, but averaged over 20 points, 5 boards, 5 assists.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said 25. I was 20 points a game.
That sounds 25, bro.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just, you know, Trae Young made a crazy push at the end, kind of how Donovan Mitchell did last year. So, you know, the media tried to push that narrative that Trae Young's a rookie of the year, just to make it more interesting. I think that's kind of the case here. Trae Young has been killing, no doubt about it. But Luka's been doing what Trae's doing now all year. So, let's not do that.
Yeah.
Let's not say Trae's over Luka. What you think?
I agree with that, just for the hype that was kind of behind Luka coming in. He kind of lived up to that, in my opinion. He can do it from, like, we always say this, to all three levels, but as a rookie, being able to just kind of score from any spot on the floor at that rate and, like, have an unstoppable move, like the step back, already in your game. Yeah. Is crazy.
He looks like, the thing about Luka is he looks like one of those guys that knows how to win, and he's gonna know how to win. Like, he's gonna know how to, you know, just win games.
And
like,
those late game situations, that's like a tree. So, for in 2018, 2019, the fourth quarter, overtime, with 5 minutes left in the quarter, for shots to tie or take the lead, Luka Doncic is fifth in the league behind Kawhi Leonard, D'Angelo Russell, Kyrie Irving, Bradley Beal, with 22 field goal makes. Shooting 50% or 48.9% with shots like in that time frame, which is basically the most highly pressured pack point of the game. And Trae Young falls at 6, which is really interesting. And then Dame Lillard, Zach LaVine, James
Harden. That's actually tough. So they both got big, big cojones. But I mean, we both agree with that. Luka, Trae, but, you know, Luka gets the slight edge. So we are.
Rookie of the year is not that important. Trae, listen, if you listening, don't be upset at us. Like, it's all right, bro. You just wasn't doing it the whole year. Like, so, you get him in the MVP race a couple years down the line.
Right. So, like I said, we want to put a little twist on it. I'm doing that with most of the awards. So, what rookie surprised you the most this year?
The rookie that surprised me the most.
Yeah.
I
mean, I have a clear cut answer.
I think for me, it would be Trae.
Yeah.
Just because, like, after the start of the year, like, I kind of not had given up on him, but I kind of had just put him off to the side, and I just said, listen, it's not going to happen for this guy for the next 2 or 3 years. But for him to turn it around as fast as he did, and I think this is a testament to Collins. Collins took a lot of pressure off him this year, second-year guy. And Pierce kind of just gave him just free reign to just figure it out on the fly.
Right.
Who would you say?
It definitely wasn't Trae, because, I mean, that's not surprising. If you watch him play, he was still doing what he did in college. He just wasn't making shots. He wasn't, up to the speed of the game yet. And you could see that it was only a matter of time. Like, he still was comfortable taking the shots. They just weren't falling, you know, early. Trae Young doesn't lack confidence. I don't know. I never really thought he would have he would have trouble translating over. But, I mean, most surprising to me by far is Landry Shamet. This kid was, and I thought Shamet would be good, just strictly off of what I would see of him in the tournament, Wichita State, and, you know, his draft prospect videos. I saw a 6'5 guy that can, you know, be a combo guard and really shoot the ball. But to set the rookie record, being Steph Curry, 167 threes in your first year, that's big time. You know, he could be a really good spot-up shooter and scorer in this league for a really, really long time with the way he seems like he takes care of his body and, you know, prepares for games. Never cheated. I got you, Landry.
Damn, I'm not even gonna hold you. That was a lot more thought out than mine.
Never cheated.
But yeah, that's definitely more. He's more of a, I guess, surprise than Trey. You're correct.
Definitely more of a surprise.
Other rookies that. Rookie that will have the best career. Right now, as currently constructed, it's going to have to be Luka just because he just got Porzingis. And having a guy like that as your second year, like, the sky's the limit. Like, for all we know, Trae Young may not get a guy like that until year 8, 9. So, as currently constructed, Luka, what do you think?
Yeah, but I kind of disagree on that last part because I like John Collins a whole lot. And, yeah, like Porzingis a lot. So, I still think Luka will have a better career because I just think he's a better basketball player right now. They're both really skilled players, but, you know, you just always take the bigger athlete, you know. So I'm going Luka right now.
And I think Luka has a little bit more to build on. Like there are parts of Luka's game where it's just like, I can't even comprehend or understand it, like how he scores and gets to these spots, like, because he's not beating guys by.
I don't know. Trae Young's ceiling is crazy too, though, because he shoots from range, and like that can just get better. Like that's the thing. Like Curry just got better at doing what he did, and he started shooting from further. Like Trae Young may be a little bit more, developed and stuff. Well, that's what makes it scary about Trae. Like, because the game is changing. Like the game is changing. Like Trae Young could be averaging 30 and. 2-3 years,
but Luka could be just like Harden, you know, like and how hard.
But I don't know if he's like that. I don't know if he's like that though, because Trae Young's definitely a better shooter than Luka, and Luka can shoot the shit out the ball. They both can shoot the ball, but Trae Young's a better like pure shooter than Luka. He is. Don't argue that. You don't think Trae Young's a better shooter than Luka?
Shot.
Bro, he's probably top five jump shot in the league.
Yeah, so part of being a good shooter is like the shots that you choose to shoot. Like just because, Luka is more of an efficient shooter. You know what I mean? Like Luka's not shooting some of those dumbass shots that Trey's taking. Maybe that just comes.
I mean, why are you calling them dumbass shots? They go in. Those are the shots. That's his range. Yeah,
the timeliness of him, and I think.
Bro, he can judge when he's going to shoot a 30-footer, bro. Come on, stop.
I know.
Doesn't matter. I know. Trae Young's a better shooter than Luka Doncic. Like, let's not do this right now. He shoots better than him. Like, Luka can shoot the ball. Don't get me wrong. He can shoot it off the bounce. But Trae Young has a ratchet. I'm talking about if it's open, that's money. I guess catch and shoot, that's money.
And what holds
off the bounce, coming up the court, off the bounce, off the court, pick and roll. If you go under, he's cashing it. If you go over it, you're not there, he's cashing. Like, Trae Young's a better shooter. I'm done with that.
I got to think about that a little bit more. We'll come back to that a little later.
Not throwing the numbers in the trash. Come on, bro.
It's not even the numbers. Like, but even off the eye test, like Luka is deadly off the dribble. Like,
nah, he's not as deadly as Trae Young off the bounce. Like, if we're not, I'm like, stop, bro. Like, stop it. Like, Luka got the left step back. He got the left step back, and that's what's mesmerizing you right now. Trae Young can come off the screen and let it go from 35 on it. Like that's not that you don't that doesn't yeah, grow in trees.
I don't see Rick Carlisle letting Luka get that off though. Like I think I don't. It's not like
he
I don't
could
think
shoot it. What do you mean? What? It's not about I don't letting. Think
Luka can not no shoot coach. It. No. You don't think Luka can't shoot that? You don't.
Why,
think
he why doesn't he?
I do. That's a huge thing. Rick Carlisle is the kind of coach that definitely.
Bro, it's like, nothing to do with a coach.
It does.
Trae Young will be shooting from 35 feet with Greg Popovich's coach.
No, yo, yes, he was. So at the start of the year, he was shooting like 20-something%, like. From that range, like that's like from 3-point range, like it was crazy. Like the first couple of games, and even from I'm gonna look from 30.
It's all about shooting is a confidence thing. It's just about the flow, getting the flow. You've seen him play against us.
He's shooting those shots because there are at times there's not. He may not get another shot.
I'm gonna leave it at this. I think Trae Young's a better shooter than Luka Doncic. Okay. Just shooter. Okay. I'm not even saying score right now or player. I'm just saying shooter.
And all right. For now, I guess I don't fully agree, but since he's the point guard and he has to, as you said, do a lot more off the dribble. Then
What do we have next?
For the next topic, we have coach of the year. Most improved player of the year. For me, I chose Pascal Siakam. Just the biggest jump of anybody, in my opinion. This year, he is currently averaging 16 points a game, or 17 points a game, up 10 points from last year, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, probably the most active player in the league, played 79 games this year. Just lengthy, never stops running.
I agree.
All those good things.
I got Siakam too. Especially being on a contender, like you can see that he can impact, you know, big time games. Being on the Raptors, that, you know, a team that's competing for a championship, he was able to just step in there and just be like a legit contributor. Like my boy Ryan Callahan said on here a little earlier and a couple episodes back. He kind of gives the Raptors a little bit of a little cushion, you know, if Kawhi does leave, that they have a guy that can, you know, potentially give them 20 a night. But, and a couple guys you could throw in there too, D'Angelo Russell, obviously. D'Lo had a big jump from last year. De'Aaron Fox was in the mix too. Those are guys I was just kind of mixing in that range. So let's move on to the next one.
So for the next one, we have Coach of the Year. Coach of the Year.
I'll go first. I'm going Budenholzer. It's perfect to see, though, because the Bucks coaching staff last year.
Jason Kidd, how
it just blew up, and they didn't really get much out of Giannis. Yeah. Well, obviously they got what they can get out of Giannis, but they didn't get what they should have got out of Giannis in that team, and you know the roster wasn't as complete as it is now. But just Budenholzer's system and the way he got them rolling, and you know Brook Lopez shooting threes, and DJ Wilson, and you know all these guys just being confident, letting their shot go, and just letting Giannis be that downhill threat, you know, distributing, throwing 95 mile per hour beam passes to the corner shooters, Tony Snell, Malcolm Brogdon, all these guys, you know, just spreading the court, and you know, just some of the actions they run to get guys shots is, you know, really impressive. And obviously you just see the record difference from last year, so I got Budenholzer.
For me, I think I would pick Mike Malone. Has Denver at 54-28 in the regular season. And I think I just take him strictly because they play in the West and because the talent on that roster, to me, I still don't really believe. Like, Jokic is good, don't get me wrong, but he's nowhere close to Giannis, you know. And, like, to be able to work a guy like that to be a superstar. Like, yeah, he is a superstar this year, 25, 10, and, like, 8 guy. But the city, yeah, that big guy averaging 8 assists is just nuts. But, I don't know. I think being able to just have a well-oiled machine and create an offense surrounded by a brick almost is a lot harder than having Giannis. And it's impressive. But I think Coach of the Year kind of has to be decided a little bit more after the playoffs, especially with these two top guys. I mean, we're deciding now, but I think we will see more after the first couple of rounds.
I mean, that's they should do these for the playoffs too.
Oh, we definitely will. Yeah, the TNT Hoops definitely will have the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm saying the NBA should though, because it completely changes.
Yeah,
it's like you can say the MVP, but then Russell Westbrook can lose in the first round after averaging 30, 10, and 10. You know what I mean?
So exactly.
That's just how it is. But the next one we're going to move on to is Sixth Man of the Year. It's an easy one. We won't have to really do too much talking on this. Then we should play Lou Will. Sixth Man like Lou Will. Two girls and they get along like they lose.
I'm going to close it out.
Yeah, we'll play Sixth Man and it. But Lou Will, Sixth Man of the Year. That dude's a bucket, man. He's just a bucket getter. Been getting buckets for pretty much a decade now. Just coming off the bench, getting his niche. He just knows his niche. He just knows how to get buckets. Him going left is deadly.
Yeah.
He's just a cold killer.
Put it in perspective, 75 games off the bench this year. Only started one game, averaging 20 points for the Clippers. Not much really else in the box sheet, but 3 boards, 5 assists. But I think Lou Will's just done a really good job in his career. He's kind of like Jamal Crawford a little bit. His game is timeless, and I feel like he'll always be able to get buckets in the league.
Yeah.
Always be able to break guys down.
Yeah.
Let's see.
So you got Sixth Man, Lou Will, obviously. So Like I said, we're going to do a little different. So we got most underrated player in the league. Who's your most, like, if you're just looking into it after watching this year, like, who do you look at and be like, well, this guy doesn't get enough credit for what he can do on the court. Like, is there anybody that you'd say is the most underrated player in the NBA? You can give me a couple.
Yeah, a couple. Klay Thompson, definitely one of those guys. Yeah. Just a lot of people kind of underrate. It was news to me that people still believe that just because you're not putting the ball on the floor a lot and breaking guys down with four or five dribbles, that would still determine you as being a top-tier player. But Klay Thompson is one of the most efficient guys. Doesn't waste a step, doesn't waste a dribble, and still gets his buckets all the while playing phenomenal defense. Another guy, underrated. I think Ben Simmons is wildly underrated. I think a lot of people just kind of take for granted what it takes to, like, just score when people are playing you 6 feet off. And everyone in the gym, especially yourself, knows you're not going to shoot, and you can still score, and you can still affect the game, you still change the game. And there are deficiencies, and it is hurting the Sixers. I'm no longer on that train saying it's okay. But at the same time, like, we can't discredit how incredible it is to see a 6'10 guy doing this, and it is his second year, so screw you, Donovan Mitchell. What do you think?
Man, my most underrated, and it's actually after this year, it's crazy, it's Brandon Ingram. I just think he's a guy that can be a 20 to 25 point per game scorer, and not saying he can be a top dude on a team, but he can be the second best guy on a championship level team. I think he's that good of a player. And I think people kind of joke about him and make fun of him and say he's not, you know, not this. But, I mean, he's only been trending upward since he's been in the league, and it's kind of just because he's on the Lakers. You know, he gets that rap. But I like B.I.'s game. And another guy I had was Jaylen Brown. I love Jaylen Brown's game. I'm a Sixers fan, but the only Celtic I actually like, you know, I obviously appreciate all their games. They're all great players. But a Celtic I actually like is Jaylen Brown. Like, he's just a two-way player. Like Ansel was saying earlier, he probably was robbed for some of his opportunity, you know, having to split minutes with all those guys, Tatum, Hayward, Marcus Smart, and, you know, Morris, all those wings they have out in Boston. But when Jaylen Brown is really rolling, he's getting out, getting steals, playing in transition, playing above the rim, you know, guarding, making that mid-range in the post and shooting threes. Yeah. He's, you know, one of the top young guys in the league, so he's somebody I think is definitely underrated. And obviously, and the last one is always Jrue Holiday.
Yeah.
Jrue Holiday just doesn't – people don't really understand. Like, that Pelicans team isn't that – like, that Pelicans team is kind of like – it's all over the place, and he kind of, you know, keeps them,
yeah, he's,
you know, intact with his consistent play every single night. He's going out there and just battling on both ends.
Yeah, I feel really bad for Jrue, man, just as kind of an aside, but, like, as a – guy that was a part of my life for a little bit, to see him kind of improve and make such strides in his game and then have to go down to New Orleans and then deal with this shit, like, and now be kind of stuck in limbo again and have to try to find another, like, competitive team to play on, it just kind of stinks for him. But hopefully he lands somewhere soon, or the Pelicans land Tatum and Brown in the offseason for Davis to kind of get him back on track in the playoffs. Let's go to most overrated player or players.
Yeah, so I think we both agreed that it's kind of tough to find an overrated player from our perspective, because we, you know, we kind of make a good assessment of who's who, you know, yeah. I mean, what guys are good for. But
and to call a guy overrated, like, the Athletic surveyed a couple guys in the league and had Russ as one of the most overrated players, and that's just, like, it's overrated in how you look at it. Like, if how
the
much
thing is, I do think Russ is overrated, though. But I don't think he's the most overrated player in the league. Yeah. Like, it's a difference. Like, I think that some people, you know,
take what he can do, yeah, too far. Like, right. Take too much consideration.
I think that, but I don't think he's the most overrated. So that's why it's, like, kind of tough to call this, you know, saying somebody's the most overrated guy. But I don't know. I mean, this is a tough one. Like, I really don't know who would necessarily be the most overrated player.
For me right now, it's just, I think it's Drummond, Grisham.
Drummond is a great one. But, I mean, do people even really think he's good?
Not anymore.
Because people, I mean, not it was good, because he's obviously good, but I'm going with Andre Drummond. I like that. Because I think Andre Drummond is one of those guys where you see the numbers and you're like, damn, like, he can get you 20 and 20. But it's like,
it doesn't translate to wins and losses.
It's like, not, yeah. It's a meaningless. Scoring 2 points is different. Like, you hitting a fadeaway and, you know, in a demoralizing way, hitting a fadeaway just with pure skill, or you just getting a putback dunk at the end of the quarter. Yeah. I mean, they're both 2 points, but they, you know, they both have different types of impact on the game. And that's how Drummond plays. And I'm just not a big fan of Drummond. I wish we would have played the best this first round so Embiid could put him on a blender.
Yeah. Other guys, Wiggins.
Wiggins is in that mix of overhead. Yeah.
Used to be Hassan Whiteside. I was saying it before we had a podcast when Hassan Whiteside just got that big deal in Miami. I was saying he was a guy that was supremely overrated. But, yeah, I don't really want to keep continuing with this just because, as you said, we know the guys that are properly rated and are about to just kind of make the next leap and or underrated, yada, yada, yada. I'm kind of rambling now, but.
Right, yeah. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, we got all our awards, man. We mixed it up. Like, we did overrated, underrated. I know you. Oh, that six man. I know you. It was kind of all over the place. You know, we did perimeter defenders and we did, you know, centers. But we just try to give y'all a little twist. Hope y'all like that today. TNT Hoops episode. Answer, you got anything to say to the people?
Once again, thank you for listening. Gave y'all 2 episodes this week. Definitely plan to be back, I think, Sunday again after we get the first Sixers game under our belt and just see how we're doing. Thanks for listening. Keep subscribing. Love.
Come on.